Hi, welcome to this first episode of Gods and Monsters by E.E. King, read by me, E.E. King. Metastellar will be serializing this once weekly, until it's done, in both print and on YouTube. So please join me for listening or reading. And now, Gods and Monsters. The destiny of man is in his own soul. Herodotus. Anatomy is destiny. Sigmund Freud. Note, this is not a vampire novel. It's about mythology, genetic determinism, fate, and what it means to be alive. It just happens to be peopled by a few vampires. Prologue, October 1961, San Francisco, the Castro District. Fate. They don't seem like sisters. They appear generations, possibly even species apart. Morta, the eldest, is gaunt and grim, her bones prominent beneath thin, pale, and taut skin. Her dress, black, long, and tight as flesh, falls water straight to the ground. A large pair of scissors dangles around her waist on a heavy chain. It's worn and used, but the blades gleam sharp as endings. Decima, the middle sister, is brown as soil, solid as earth. She sits behind a wooden table, twisting a tape measure round and round her hands. Nana, the youngest, is beautiful. She sits before a large wooden loom, her hands smooth and pale as milk, flutter like doves, continually drawing woof through warp, creating intricate design. The sisters sit in a dim back room of a small shop on a dark alleyway. "I've never woven anything like this," says Nana. "I don't have a pattern. I don't know what thread to use." Decima frowns. She prefers plain, simple fashions. "It is odd," says Morta, staring at the lopsided fabric. "I've never seen one like it." San Francisco, 1986, Jasmine's Tale. "I'm unequivocally a night person. I think the sunrise looks better in reverse." "He was a morning man. You might think our love was doomed, but no, just the opposite. We meet at twilight, and so never tire of each other. My love is strong and healthy, with almost white blonde hair and eyes clear as a cloudless sky. He smells of sunlight. His skin is warm." "Not I. I am pale, hair black, hands cold as coffin nails. We meet in the gray hours of transformation, when the world has lost its light but not discovered darkness. My teeth have not yet lengthened, although they always are a tad pointy. Audrey Hepburn with razor incisors, Claudette Colbert with fangs. I'm not yet thirsty, and my hot sun lover can bare his throat to me with no fear. He has the strong, white, flat teeth of an exceptionally well-groomed horse. As he tosses his head in the gloaming, I can feel the heat and see the light of a small sun. He is as close as I will ever get to daylight. I am as close as he will ever get to death. In his arms, I can imagine a sunrise without pain. We don't talk. There's too little time. Besides, what could he tell me that I have not already learned from his being? I know that he sweats under a clear blue sky, that tiny flying insects are attracted to his moisture and his scent. I know he doesn't enjoy this, but I'm fascinated. Insects fear me. They drop from the night and lie unmoving at my feet. Only the bats enjoy my company. Bats, owls, and the occasional nightjar. My body tightens with longing, even as my incisors lengthen. My love yawns. Luckily for him, our time together is almost over. If only the night would not come, making me thirsty, making me lust for other pleasures. If only sun would not rise, denying me my love, I imagine I could be happy. I think he could be content. Pathetic fantasy. I know that the sun will rise and that night will come. I never mention it, but I can't help noticing that he's never invited me into his home. I cannot enter without permission, though once inside, I can forever come and go at will through keyholes or under doors. We don't dine together. He likes pasta with garlic. I like blood. He never gives me silver, even if it didn't burn my flesh. I couldn't admire myself. I have no reflection. He cannot marry me, at least not in a church. We clasp each other in these few hours between dusk and dawn, wishing that vampires really do sparkle in the sun, that flesh rots not, and that love lasts, wishing that this time will be different. One night, my love comes too early, or maybe he stays too long. I don't remember, although I can still recall the intoxicating sun scent and taste of the rich warmth of his blood. My love affairs ever end thus. I always long for them to turn out differently. It's so disheartening. If only I didn't fall in love so often with these warm-blooded vessels of nutrition. I constantly swear I'll convert. Become a celibate bloodsucker, a monastic mosquito, a vamp nun. But then I see some sun-glazed man smelling of day, and it begins again. Chemistry, alchemy, love potion number 9, blood. Locked in the body like a coffin, like a grave, changes color in the air, binding oxygen. Absorbing different wavelengths, and blue blood turns to red desire. My men end up as pale as I, but much more finite and more still. I'd weep if I had tears, but we have no water in us and no salt. We are dry ice, we creatures of the night. You probably think I could make my love immortal with a bite, but it's not that easy. First, they need to be healthy and dead, which is difficult. They need to have ingested some vampire blood. And lastly, within 24 hours, they need to drink copious amounts of human blood. My lovers are decidedly unpeckish when they're dead. I can't even get them to swallow. Not that I try that hard. If I'm completely honest, once they lie before me, still pale and bloodless, I lose affection for them. I'm like an old man with a trophy wife. I'm not proud of it. But there it is. Not that I have never changed anyone. I did once. Jeremy was his name. I can still see his face. He was pale for a human. Hair sleek as a seal's. Emerald-eyed. I followed him one night. He smelled of smoke and tasted of sorrow. Reviving him was even more unpleasant than I'd imagined. I cut my wrist. But he would not suck. I had to rub my wound against his, fusing blood to blood, marrying plasma. From the first moment I'd been turned, I'd sucked eagerly. I hunted easily and with fervor. But not Jeremy. He lay limp, barely undead. I had to stun 4 late-night partiers and present them unconscious and practically gift-wrapped before he'd drink. Even then, he was ill. It was 2 weeks before he began to hunt on his own. We parted, or rather I did, disappearing one night, drawn to new blood and more finite lovers. San Francisco, 1986, endings and beginnings. One midnight, I go to a discotheque, a new one. They have flashing crystal, but luckily, no silver. They serve drinks and finger food, but happily no garlic. On the dance floor, sumo wrestlers, huge men, over 300 pounds each, butt each other like hippos. Between bouts, one lumbers outside. Quicker than a dance step, I am upon him. Who would have thought that the fat man had so much blood in him? I am more than sated. While not as tender or tasty as my lover's, it's nice to be so filled. Inside, I can enjoy the night without hunger pangs. I dance with abandon, baring my white neck to the flashing disco ball. A pale man, eyes cobalt as twilight, unfathomable as belief, joins me. He doesn't smell of sun or day, but of secrets. He whispers his name, Gabrielle, into my ear, tickling the fine hairs on my neck, making them rise. I tell him mine, Jasmine. Together we walk into the night, down dark streets glowing with neon to an apartment, his apartment. He invites me in. Love has never been like this. I know it must be love because my circadian rhythms, usually so finely tuned, are silent. We rest in each other's arms. I don't sleep. I watch him slumber and still my breath to match his, pretending just for a while that this will last. I look upon his face, memorizing his perfectly carved features, imprinting this time forever in my mind. Suddenly, I realize he's not asleep. His indigo eyes are wide open. The only things that can kill a vampire are the sun, being staked through the heart, and werewolves. Not really much to boast about for a creature with supernatural powers. Being staked through the heart or being attacked by a werewolf will pretty much put an end to anything. Why two creatures governed by dark should be such at odds with each other is a mystery. But there it is. Silver, garlic, and crosses, while definitely not pleasant, are rarely lethal. I've known more than a few of my kind who'll gladly bear some pain to wear a pair of glittery earrings or carry a silver bullet. A silver bullet, after all, is the only foolproof way to kill a werewolf. And silver is no more painful than a pair of tight stiletto heels. It's much less painful than foot binding, circumcision, or any of the myriad ways humans find to torture their own. Gabriel is no werewolf. He's a man like any other. I have the power. I know his name. He has invited me into his home. He's beautiful. Finely chiseled features. Eyes so deep in indigo you could forget time in his arms. And I do. Day and dark seem of no more urgency or import to me now than to the living. A pliable light steals across him, delicate and tender. It's much more different than a sunset. I thought I was immune to the pain love brings. Being undead should make one infinite, but even we creatures of the night have our soft spots. The sun is one, a big, burning, white-hot one. Under his gaze, I cannot flee to that good night. He holds me in this new day. It burns, it scorches, it blazes onto my retina, a last vision of his even, white, flat teeth. Who would have thought that the lust of an omnivore could be deadly? Thank you. Join us next week. And next week, during the 18 years that Gabriel lives with the sisters, he protests only once. It is on that first day when he's baptized and holy water touches him. The drop sizzles as it falls, burning a small white scar like a fallen star onto his forehead. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week. Bye-bye now.